Welcome to the County Conversations Podcast, brought to you by the Florida Association of Counties Institute for County Government, with support from the University of Florida's IFAS. In this podcast, we dive deep into the diverse and dynamic world of Florida's counties with engaging interviews and thought-provoking conversations surrounding the challenges as well as successes of Florida's counties. Each episode brings you firsthand perspectives from county commissioners, government officials, community leaders, and subject matter experts who are shaping the future of our state. We explore a wide range of topics from economic development and public safety to environmental conservation and emerging technologies. Our aim here is to provide a platform for knowledge sharing, collaboration, and inspiration for county officials and residents alike. Whether you're a county commissioner, government professional, or simply interested in understanding the local government landscape, we hope this podcast provides valuable insights and practical takeaways on all things counties.
Hello, Mark, and welcome back to the County Conversations Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me back. Always very happy to talk about Florida insurance issues with you.
Yeah, you're only the second person to have come on here twice, so that's either a compliment to you or a compliment to us. But anyway, thank you for taking the time to do this. I do want to take a second to reintroduce you for those who haven't listened to the first podcast. Mark Friedlander is Director of Corporate Communications with the Insurance Information Institute, also known as III. It's much easier to say. It's a position he's held since 2020, although he's been there since 2019. He's got extensive experience in the insurance industry. He was head of corporate communications and assistant secretary at the Main Street America Group. That's a super regional property casualty carrier based in Jacksonville, Florida. Mark is well known in the media in providing uncluttered, unbiased information about the insurance industry. He's quoted frequently in the media, which is where we found him last year. And with that, Mark, if you don't mind, just a little bit about III, and then we'll get in.
The III is a nonprofit, nonpartisan research and education organization focused on helping American consumers better understand insurance. Our niche is primarily property casualty, meaning home and auto and related products. We also are in the life insurance space. We don't do health insurance. So primarily home and auto, umbrella coverage, things of that nature, then life as well.
Great. Thank you. Mark, what I thought we would do today is pick up where we left off when we last spoke, which was about 8 months ago, last July. And one thing you stated during our conversation was that Florida's insurance industry has been in crisis for years. You said it was largely man-made, and you pointed to two primary issues, among others, one, fraudulent claims, and two, legal system abuse. And those issues have been addressed, at least in part, through legislation from 2022 and 2023, and we can talk about that again. But one of my takeaways from that podcast was this, and let me know if I get this right. You mentioned an important indicator of how private carriers view Florida's market is to look at the number of policies and Citizens property insurance. And as a reminder to listeners, Citizens is the state-created insurance entity designed to provide insurance for those who cannot obtain it in the private market, and they're the insurer of last resort. But at that time, again, this is in July of last year, Citizens had about 1.3 million policies, and based on growth projections or the current monthly uptake, the thought was that it would reach 1.7 million by the end of the year. And what that means is Citizens is writing more policies and the private market is not, and that's not healthy. And subsequent to our talk, Citizens did in fact grow. Their dashboard shows that the number peaked around September to about 1.4 million policies. And then we see a decline to the current number, which is about 1.16, which has to be a good sign. So what my question is to start us off is, how does the Institute account for that drop?
Citizens is moving in the right direction. They never reached the 1.7, as you mentioned. 1.4 was the peak last year, coming down about 300,000 net drop since that peak. It's because of depopulation. What does that mean? Depopulation is when private insurers step up and agree to take on Citizens customers. So there's two really key takeaways here. One is Citizens is reducing its risk exposure, which is the critical point we talked about in the last podcast. But two is it shows new capacity in the private market. When private insurers participate in depopulation, it means they could take on risk. And most of the participants in the depopulation are companies that have been operating in Florida for many years. Many of those were on the sidelines for the last few years because of the volatility in the market. They were not writing new business. Now they are taking on these policies. Plus, we have new carriers that have come into the market. There are 8 new insurers that have been approved roughly over the past year. Some of those are already participating in the Citizens Depopulation Program. I think 2 of them are at this point. 2 are up and running. The others will be in the market soon. The point is private market capacity. That is a critical measure of an improving market. So we're seeing a lot of positive signs since we last spoke.
Are those private carriers viewing the risk differently? Because you mentioned last time that if someone can go into the private market and get a policy that is no more than 20% of what Citizens can offer, then the property owner has to take that policy. So are they viewing risk a little bit differently?
Well, first of all, let me explain. When you participate in depopulation as a private insurer, you get to cherry pick your risk. So the best risks are taken by the private insurers. Citizens will maintain the risks that aren't as good, meaning the higher risks. So they're picking risk. For example, say a company says, we'll agree to take 25,000 policies in June of this year. That doesn't mean all 25,000 are going to move, but they're given a pool of 25,000. They can make formal takeout offers to those 25,000. And if they're able to price them within 20% of the Citizens renewal price, then either the policyholder from Citizens will have to move to Citizens, or they'll have to find coverage elsewhere, because that's the new state regulation. You cannot turn down an offer within 20%. If the offer is over 20%, you could stay with Citizens. And one of the things we learned early on when depopulation really started to ramp up about October last year, you must respond to the Citizens takeout offer. You can't ignore it. If you don't like the offer, you can't just throw it away, because say it's 40% more than what you're paying now. You throw it away, you're going to be paying 40% more with another company. So you have to respond either yes or no. And it gives consumers options. And yeah, we understand from the consumer perspective, nobody wants to pay more. We get that. But for a healthy market, Citizens cannot continue to maintain a million plus policies. That's just not a sustainable situation. And they want to get to a manageable risk level. And what they call that is 400,000 to 500,000 policies. They have a long way to go, because at the same time, while depopulation is moving policies, they're still writing new business as Citizens. They haven't stopped writing business, in fact, because there's still a lot of challenges in the market. We want to be very honest with your audience. Not everything is cured better, but not totally fixed. There are still many consumers across Florida, they can't find coverage in the private market, or they're being non-renewed. That's another issue. That's kind of an under-the-radar issue, but many of the insurers that write in Florida are still looking at their risk exposure and making decisions in certain markets. They don't want to renew policies. So we are hearing anecdotally from insurance agents that their customers are getting non-renewals, and a lot of those policies are ending up with Citizens. So overall, the net decline is about 300,000 from that peak last September. That's a good thing, but they're still adding policies. So while you're adding, subtracting, doing all the math, it's going to take a long time to get to that 400,000, 500,000 range that they want to be in.
Are there incentives for private carriers to take on someone from Citizens?
No specific incentives that we're aware of, other than growing their portfolios of business in Florida, growing their policies in force, as we call it in the insurance industry. They need to determine, could they take on the risk? Could they price it appropriately so that they could write this business profitably? Because we've had 8 consecutive years now, of unprofitable business in Florida, meaning that's the cumulative underwriting total for Florida, 8 consecutive years. Now, last year was certainly much better than the year before, a great improvement, but it's still in the red. It's not sustainable. There's no state in the country that has 8 consecutive years of underwriting losses. It's never been seen before anywhere in the U.S. And it's better, but all it takes is one very bad hurricane season, and we're going to see those underwriting losses escalate. I mean, last year was fairly mild. We had one hurricane, Idalia, major hurricane, but it hit a sparse area of Florida. The Big Bend, not a lot of property loss compared to certainly Ian the year before. Makes a big difference. The other big difference last year, and actually insurers posted a cumulative net income for the first time in 7 years. The reason why was, number one, the hurricane issues, but number two, investment results. Insurers, like many other businesses, put money in the financial markets, and the financial markets had the greatest year, I believe, in U.S. history. I'm not a financial expert, but I could do the math. I have a 401k like many other people that are employed. It absolutely sailed. Insurers did very well across the country, not just in Florida, with investment results last year. It's hard to predict where the markets will go this year. We just don't know. But that was certainly helpful. So first net income profit in 7 years, but 8th consecutive underwriting loss. So there's work to be done still.
Let's talk about the second thing that I've got down. And this deals with the 2 points that I had mentioned earlier, the fraud claims and legal system abuse. And I know it's going to take several years before those legislative reforms actually trickle down. But I thought I read something that indicated that some of the claims are going down, at least for non-disaster type claims. Is that, can you talk about the legislative reforms?
We are seeing a decline in fraudulent claims and in volume of property claim lawsuits. But the fact that there were so many lawsuits already in the system before the laws changed, it's going to take a lot of time to work its way through the court system here in Florida. And those expenses still hit the bottom line of insurers. And I'll give you an example. Last month, Citizens Executives went before its Board of Governors and asked for, I believe it was between $100 million and $200 million for additional funding for legal defense costs. That's the last note I saw on that. Because the legal defense costs are more than they forecast. Why? Because all these mass volumes of lawsuits that have been filed in the past, particularly last March, before the governor signed a bill, which was a wide sweeping tort reform bill about a one-way attorney fees, the courts were just jammed with literally several hundred thousand cases. And it was all types. It was home, auto, business, a wide variety. It wasn't just property insurance claims. It was a wide variety. But those are still working their way through, and those expenses are hitting the bottom line. But overall, the trend is better. Many insurers have reported a decline in volume of new lawsuits received in 2023 versus 2022. Yet, the data shows Florida still has a very disproportionate level of litigation compared to any other state. Probably 3 to 4 times California in 2023, and California is twice the size of the Florida market. Double the population, double the amount of homes to insure, and Florida is still 3 to 4 times more lawsuits than California. So we're heading in the right direction. Is it totally fixed? No. And I'll tell you the other side of it, the claim fraud. We're still hearing from very good sources that fraudulent contractors, particularly fraudulent roofers, are still playing schemes on Florida homeowners. It's still happening. They're working around the law. The law was you could no longer use assignment of benefits where you sign over your claim to a third party like a contractor. It's still happening with quasi assignment of benefits. They're called direction to pay or some other names, perhaps, different types of agreements that aren't uncovered under the law. And we've known about this for years, why the law didn't address other types of agreements. We're not lobbyists. I couldn't tell you. We don't get involved with legislation, but it's clearly a loophole that is being exploited, and hopefully it will be addressed in the future. Once again, we don't lobby in Tallahassee or any other state capital. So,
Mark, on the roof issue, doesn't the adjuster have to confirm that there's an issue that needs to be fixed? And a contractor can't just go up there and say, well, you got two missing shingles, let's get you a whole new roof.
Well, here's part of the scam, Eric. These unscrupulous roofers many times will send somebody up to cause further damage. So in addition to just a fraudulent roof claim, they're actually committing a felony. I was trying to think of the right term. They're committing a felony by doing that, by causing intentional damage to say, well, no, the roof's in really bad shape. There might have been two loose shingles. Now half the roof is loose. This needs complete repair and replacement. It's still happening. And, you know, there's one story that I did confirm of someone who's moving down here looking for a job. They were a roofing contractor. They were interviewed by a Florida roofing firm a couple years ago. And they were asked in the interview, are you willing to commit fraud, basically? That was part of the interview. Are you willing to go up and cause intentional damage on a roof? If so, we'll hire you. I mean, that's, yeah. And you understand why we have problems in Florida, right?
Yeah. After a small hurricane, Category 1 here in Tallahassee, I had two really nice young guys that were contractors, and they were going up and down the street, and he says, I can get you a new roof. And he said, I need you to get off my porch.
Well, there you go. And that's the best advice for anybody listening. Any contractor solicits business after a storm, which is the most vulnerable time for Floridians, knocking on doors, walking up and down the street, handing out flyers, tell them to leave. Don't even engage, because 99 times out of 100, they are fraudsters. And it happens in other markets too, after disasters, after tornadoes, wildfires. We see the same thing in other parts of the country. They take advantage of storm victims. And I know the state of Florida is cracking down on this as much as possible. They've hired a lot of new investigators to track fraudulent schemes. And there have been arrests made this year related to roof fraud and other types of contractor fraud. So they're on top of it, but it's still happening, unfortunately.
Mark, you mentioned the 8 new carriers have been admitted into Florida to write insurance. And I wanted to know if, did you see, there were a couple of articles in the papers, and then I found, I guess it was in the paper, but basically there's a non-peer-reviewed research study that was done by Harvard, Columbia University, and the Federal Reserve Board that basically said that a lot of the small insurers that are operating in Florida are considered financially weak. And they talk about the ratings company, and I don't want to get into that, but did you happen to see that? And do you have any comments on that?
Here's our take on that. Non-peer review, that's kind of a subheadline there. Not factually based. I look at that more as an op-ed, because in fact, the authors of the study said, our data is counterfactual. That's the term they use. Meaning they're just basically having a hypothesis of data. They're not basing on hard data. It's not an accurate depiction of the market. It's not an accurate depiction of the company, specifically the rating company they addressed in the study. It doesn't have a lot of legs to stand on. And when it's non-peer reviewed, I know that some professors at Florida State were asked to comment on it. They said, we don't comment on non-peer reviewed studies. That was our answer to one media outlet. And I 100% agree. Although we'll give an opinion, but it's just a source in the industry. We're not an academic source, of course, but it doesn't have much to stand on. It made a lot of headlines. It was in the news cycle for a few days. And it rehashed a lot of old information too about Florida insurers don't have capital levels equal with national insurers? Well, of course, they're smaller companies, obviously. They're niche companies, they're monoline insurers, primarily just at residential business in Florida, maybe a handful of other states. They're not intended to be national insurers. They're not going to have the capital position. And we have done the analysis of the companies that failed in Florida over the last few years and are 100% certain that the six companies that went insolvent in 2022, all before Hurricane Ian, were driven out of business by legal system abuse. They were all buried literally with thousands of frivolous lawsuits, in our opinion. And not having the capital position of a national carrier, they can't afford that. They can't handle that. They were intentionally targeted by certain trial attorneys that specialize in suing insurers. And we see the billboards all over the state. We call them billboard attorneys. They're not shy. We see them out there all the time. No matter what road you drive on, you're going to see a billboard attorney advertising for business. Legal system abuse is a big problem, and it literally drove smaller companies out of business here in Florida.
I guess the third leg of the stool that we talked about last time was reinsurance. And can you remind me how this works? Does everyone have to go to the CAT fund as their reinsurance, or can they go outside Florida, I guess Germany or Sweden, to get reinsurance? How does that work?
There is a reinsurance program established by the Florida legislature that Florida insurers could take advantage of, but it's only for certain layers of coverage. It's not a full package program. So Florida insurers still need to shop the global reinsurance market. And there's a lot of question marks about what's going to happen this year, because typically the renewal date is June 1st, start of the Atlantic hurricane season. We've seen the forecast. We work with Dr. Klossbach and his team at Colorado State University, and they put out the most ominous forecast in their history in terms of volume of storms, number of hurricanes, number of major hurricanes, impacts on the U.S., impacts on Florida, and have the highest confidence level they've ever given an April forecast. That's pretty frightening. And actually, I believe the Weather Channel group just one-upped it with even a stronger forecast than Colorado State. So they kind of said, we'll see you and we'll raise you. And we haven't seen the NOAA forecast yet. It's another important one that'll be out before the season starts, probably in a few weeks. That's going to be concerning, because the global reinsurance groups, they have to look at their catastrophe modeling and determine what kind of risk we're taking on here for the 2024 hurricane season. There's a good chance rates will go up again. So what happens is, if Florida property insurers pay more for their reinsurance, that will be a downstream pass along cost to consumers. It won't be right away, but if they pay more for their June renewals, most likely in late 2024 going to 2025, it would be factored into rate adjustments. So we'll just have to see how it plays out. All I can tell you is, last year, based on an analysis we reviewed, the average increases for Florida insurers ran between 40 and 100%. That was last year's hurricane season. So we just don't know what this year is going to bring. Previous renewal periods of January 1 and April 1 for the insurance industry were pretty moderate, actually less than expected. So we'll hope the trend continues, but that forecast certainly could ring some bells in the climate risk rooms of the global reinsurers.
What do you make of OIR? They issued something out in early April that said the CAT fund rates are decreasing from participating insurers. And it said it was based on model loss cost indications, even though the exposure is growing.
I'm not sure where they saw that data. I mean, the data we've seen, industry data from very reliable catastrophe modelers, globally known catastrophe modelers, show that it increased significantly last year. So varying data, because I'm not saying they're wrong, but I'm not sure where their data came from. I know where our data comes from, and I think it's very accurate.
One thing we didn't talk about last time, and I'm going to credit mutual acquaintance Lisa Miller, who's here in Tallahassee.
Oh, yes, of course.
And one of her either podcasts or newsletter or both, she talked about inflation. That's something I hadn't thought about. She talked about the costs of lumber and other construction costs as something that, you know, will drive up insurance costs. And I didn't even think about that, but it's really very obvious. So any thoughts there?
Replacement costs impact insurance, not only in Florida, but across the country. In fact, the Insurance Information Institute did an analysis on replacement costs from the period 2019 through 2022, four-year period, 55% cumulative increase in replacement costs, nearly four times the consumer price index, which ran about 15% cumulatively during the same period. Escalating costs, construction materials, labor shortages. Combination of those two has led to this escalation, but we are starting to see moderation in that area. It's coming down, but it's still a factor across the country, not as severe as it was certainly during the first 2 years of the pandemic when there were these massive shortages of materials, all types of supply chain disruption. Lumber shot up tremendously in terms of cost, but it's still an issue, and it still impacts the pricing of insurance across the country. Like I said, not just a Florida issue at all.
What does III make of some of the budgetary measures that were passed to help provide some tax relief? I think there is a one-year exemption on the premium tax on insurance, and I think the 1% assessment on the Florida Insurance Guarantee Association, and then fire marshal's assessment. Is that going to have any significant impact on a premium?
Minimal impacts. Any savings is good, let's be honest. And I've talked about this a lot with the media the last few months, but it's very small. I mean, on average, maybe a couple hundred hours, probably less, but roughly around 200. And then there's also a tax fee savings if you have flood insurance. And that's very small because there's no fees there. It's just the tax. So potentially, if you have home insurance and flood insurance, your total savings could be about $300 a year. But when you look at how much insurance has gone up the last few years, I mean, cumulatively, our analysis shows home insurance has gone up 102% over the past 3 years, including 42% last year alone. We're expecting more moderate changes this year. The trends show it's going to be much more moderate than it's been. But 102%. So you've gone up 102% for 3 years cumulatively, and now you're going to save a couple hundred hours.
So
it's been a school. But it's better. It's better than adding fees. You know, that's the way we look at it. Any savings is good. In fact, three smaller regional insurers here in Florida just applied for slight rate decreases, which is another good sign of changes in the market, but they're minuscule. Two of them were 0.5%. Now, you want to get out the calculator on 0.5%, maybe $30 if you're lucky, right? But our answer is it's better than them going up, because how many straight years have we seen increases and substantial increases? Many people reporting year over year renewal bills, 50% or more. Your rate's not going to go up this year. Great news. That's a big win for consumers. So we have to look at the big picture. Rates starting to moderate.
You get to my final point, and I don't know if you're able to talk about this, but you just mentioned the decrease in rates. I thought those carriers were somewhere over in Jacksonville, or may have saw it on News for Jax. But so they're dropping their rates, albeit small, but then there's reports that a couple of companies have asked for 50% and a little bit more than 50% increases recently. Can you talk about what's the process for how those increases are requested? What does OIR look at? Can they come back, you know, every year or every 6 months for an increase? How does that work?
Well, first of all, let me explain those large increases. Let me start there. Those were 2023 increases. The virtual hearings that the OIR had in recent weeks were based on changes in pricing that were already implemented 6 to 9 months ago. So it's kind of after the fact. Why it took so long for the OIR to have a hearing, I can't answer that for them. But I could tell you the data that drove those higher rate increases, roughly about 50% on average, was based on Hurricane Ian. It goes back 2 years now. It's not current. we need to look at what's happening in the current market. The current market shows moderate rate increases, or in even the case of these three companies that News 4 Jax did a story on the other day, they're virtually no change, or they're actually going down. So the trend is positive. Now, will most Florida homeowners see a rate increase in 2024? Most likely. That's the answer. Will it be as bad as past years? Hopefully not. But, and remember too, when it's a rate, when somebody makes a rate change, a company makes a rate change, that's just an average. For example, say you're asking for a 5% increase. Some homeowners might see a 25% increase based on individual rating factors. Others might see no increase. That's just kind of a starting point of the rate. So it's not, people don't really understand how it works, and I don't want to get too much in the weeds with this audience, but it's not every person doesn't see the rate change exactly as it's filed. That's not how it works. That's just kind of a base point. And it could be up or down. Same with Citizens. When Citizens gets its rates approved, some see more, some see less. That's just the way it works with rating.
But are the requests done on an as needed basis, or are they, does every company do it every year?
It's as needed. Some file more than once a year. Some might not file for a couple of years. It varies by company. There's no set limit. It doesn't have to be annually. It doesn't have to be ever. It could be more than once a year, though. That is possible, and it has happened in the past.
All right. All right. So I guess to cap us off, Mark, and I know folks in the media do this all the time, I ask you Triple I to look into the crystal ball. I mean, a lot of the pieces on the legislative front have been put in place. There's other issues on having new carriers in the market. We got a kind of a dire projection for a bad hurricane season. How does Triple I look at where we're headed on insurance in Florida?
The Florida property insurance market is in a much stronger position heading into this hurricane season than the past several years. The market is improving. Companies are financially stronger than they've been in past years. Companies are prepared to handle large volumes of claims if hurricanes blow our way. None of them should have any problems getting adequate reinsurance for this season. It's just a matter of how much the cost is going to be, which is unknown at this point with the June 1 renewals. But overall, the market is in much better shape than it's been for many years. And all signs point that it's heading in the right direction.
That is almost the complete opposite of the doom and gloom that we talked about last July. So I'm happy to hear that. That's great news. I think maybe the very, very last thing, and I told you we only had one thing, but does the insurance market, not in terms of their modeling, but do they look at a state like Florida that has done a lot of things to reduce, mitigate the damages from storms? And let's just start with a very strong growth management program, which is supposed to encourage communities to direct populations away from coastal areas. You have a unified building code. You have retrofit programs like My Safe Florida, and then a couple others that the state emergency management runs. You have regulations like the Coastal Construction Control Line, which requires higher constructions. You have a product approval process that was put in place after Andrew. So do the markets look at some of those regulatory and policy things that have been put in place in Florida as positive things to come into the state?
Clearly, all the factors weigh into the equation when they look at risk modeling. And Florida proudly has the strongest building codes in the country. Always ranks number one in the rankings from the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, former Tampa-based company, now in South Carolina. Always at the top of the list. That's really critical because stronger construction, stronger codes equals more resilience from windstorms. My Safe Florida Home program on an individual basis, helping homeowners strengthen their properties. In insurance, we're all about today what's called predict and prevent. What could you as a homeowner do to predict and prevent losses and make your home more resilient to weather events. In Florida, we talk about hurricanes. This all ties into the equation. So clearly, yes, there are positive aspects of what's happening in Florida that are weighed by the modelers.
Fantastic. Mark, this was very enlightening. It's a topic that I don't have a lot of experience with, and it's I think a topic that's very confusing for a lot of consumers and including a lot of our members. And you do excellent work in explaining this stuff at a very basic level. And so once again, I appreciate you taking the time on a Friday afternoon to come on and chat with us.
Well, another hot April day in Florida. And it's great to be in my air conditioned home studio and talk with you, and to be a repeat guest. I'm very proud of that. So I thank you for coming back.
All right, Mark, take care. Thank you.
Have a great day. Thank you.